Greetings, travelers, and welcome back to Tales from the Enchanted Forest podcast.
Salam! Welcome, everybody. I'm Sparrow here with Fox.
And today we are celebrating the very first day of spring. I mean, technically, it has felt like spring here on and off for the past month anyway, but I'm very excited for the seasonally appropriate sunshine and blue skies. What about you, Sparrow? How's the weather over there?
You know what? It's been doing that. No snow on the ground, but the past couple days we've had the flurries of snow come, but it's not been cold enough for it to stick, but cold enough just to be annoying.
Okay.
But it's fine. I'm fine with it. We've had a fair amount of sun despite all of the cold weather and the flurry of snow. So I have just enjoyed kind of seeing the sun peek out here. But I'm very much looking forward to spring. I think it's time. It's time for spring to be here.
I feel like it's been spring, and I mean, I am kind of jealous that you have snow because I would like some snow. But in the Alps, it's just been so sunny recently. Like, I think one day we were skiing in the morning and then suntanning in the afternoon. Just because the weather change is so drastic. But that's kind of my thing I'm into for this week. I'm very much into consistent sunlight. I'm one of those people that needs to like sit in the sun or read in the sun or just have walks in the sun so I can get my daily dose of sunlight. Otherwise, I get really cranky and moody. And in general, I think my mood definitely does go down when I spend too much time indoors, when I spend too much time with overcast days. So it's been really nice to have consistent sunlight. And now, as of the day this podcast gets released, it will be appropriate sunlight.
Yay. Appropriate sunlight because it's now spring.
Well, yes, because I don't like it when it's like some days are wintry and cold and dry and the next day it's sunny and bright, because you never know if you can put your winter clothes away yet, if you have to keep your winter clothes up, if you can do your spring cleaning, if you can't. So I just need some kind of rhythm to my days. And I think now we have a little bit of rain in the forecast. Hopefully snow up the mountains, but in general, it looks like some good consistent weather so I can take my winter stuff down.
My niece was born in late April, mm-hmm. and when she was born, there was a snowstorm here. So my new rule of thumb is never to put all the winter stuff away until her birthday has passed, because there has been instances where it's just winter has reappeared for then. So in my mind, like, really, spring will be here and like we'll get more consistent weather, but we won't be out of the woods yet till we get like really into May.
See, but that's Canada. I feel like in Canada you can't put your winter stuff away.
No.
My mother-in-law has a really funny story about how when her brother just got married, her sister-in-law came from Canada, and as soon as the winter, like it was spring, she was trying to put away her winter stuff and her sweaters. And my mother-in-law just said to her, no, we don't do that here. You need to keep it year round. You can't put your sweaters away. You can't just take out your spring stuff. But I think here I can at least get rid of like the salopettes and the like multitudes of hats and hand warmers and scarves and stuff like that. Like, I feel like that's a bit done now. I've decided.
Yeah. Well, while you have been into being outdoors, mm-hmm. I've been into being indoors. I'm very much an indoors person. So, yeah, I'm trying to think of what to talk about. I've been in between a lot of stuff recently. I went to Comic-Con this weekend, which was really fun.
Ooh.
So, and the one thing I got was I got this really fancy big D20. With like liquid like glitter inside, so when you roll it, it's got the swirl effect inside, and I've kind of been obsessed with just rolling that.
But wait, the most important question: does your cat like it?
I'm so obsessed with it right now. I don't want to like let my cat interact with it. She can play with all the other more durable dice.
For those of you who don't know, Sparrow's cat. I've seen Sparrow just throw dice, and Sparrow's cat will go after them in the funniest way, and it's so cute. And she wants to be a dungeon master so badly.
And I am quite the dice goblin. So I've got a ton of them. So sometimes I'll be just sitting on a call with Fox and I'll just very casual just keep throwing dice in the corner of the room. My cat will just keep chasing after it and coming back to me for the next one because she can't retrieve it. She's like, that's work on her part. I don't blame her. This one's like bigger. It's got a very nice weight to it and it's like perfect size in my hand. And anyways, but also that led to me going back and listening to more Dimension 20 shows. Mm-hmm. But the one thing I'm listening to right now is they're kind of like the after show where they talk about the games they just played, and I'm listening to them talk about their season of Crown of Candy, mm-hmm. which Fox
Crown of Candy.
I really think you'd like this one. Yeah, so it's like imagine Game of Thrones,
okay,
but in Candyland, and that is what that show is. Everybody is a food of some sort, but it's like no one is allowed to have like Revivify. If anyone dies, like they're just dead. And there's like very minimal access to healing, and it's all like this political intrigue show. It's really, really good. Like, it sounds so dumb, but it's really.
I mean, you did just use Candyland, food people, and political intrigue in the same sentence.
I try and be so careful about the D&D stuff I recommend, but once again, I feel like you would get a kick out of this. Again, I know you're not into D&D shows. But it's just so flipping good of, like, if you liked Game of Thrones and you like comedy, you're going to enjoy this. It's such high stakes. It's so well done. Ugh, I can't talk too much about it without spoiling it. But yeah, it is exactly as it sounds. There's, like, the Emperor's a grape. The king we follow around is Pop Rocks with, like, a giant gummy bear as his, like, guard protecting him. And there's a giant chocolate bunny who is like one of their spellcasters.
This sounds like it should be animated.
It would be so good animated. But because of like the stakes that they're playing at, it's like one of the most tense D&D shows I've ever watched. It's so good.
I mean, if I ever get into D&D stuff, because I feel like eventually I will. I feel like once I get into it, I'll be obsessed. But at the moment, I'm trying not to find new things to get obsessed with. Although, now that I finished Modern Family, I'm kind of in between like a sitcom. I don't know. It's like a hole that I've just been filling with podcasts. So we'll see. I never commit to D&D stuff just because I find it so long. And I prefer playing D&D and playing Baldur's Gate to listening to people play games.
Yeah.
But with the right personalities, I think, because there were some of the Critical Role stuff that I did listen to when my husband was listening.
It's all fair. I really think you would enjoy this shenanigans. Again, it's got all the high, big political chess piece moves happening in it. And there's like real stakes of like death is such a real thing. Because in D&D, it's so easy to be like, okay, revivify, raise dead, whatever.
Or on Baldur's Gate to be like, save and then reload.
Yeah, but then these characters are talking to a piece of broccoli who's very seriously telling them what's going on in the world. It's just wonderful.
Well, Sparrow, if you like shenanigans, I have the story for you. So countries around the world are celebrating spring with all different kinds of festivals, but today is also the Persian New Year, which we call Nowruz. And to honor all those celebrating, we have chosen a Persian tale today called Fatma and the Crow. This tale is from the folktales of ancient Persia, as retold by Farooq Hikmat, who recalls the stories from his childhood in Shiraz, Iran. And his stories came from his parents, his relatives, his tutors, servants, nurses, and even professional storytellers, all gathering together in the evening when there was nothing to do but sit on the carpets next to rosebuds and share thrilling tales. And then when he grew up and he had his own daughter, he realized that the stories that she was learning were very different from the ones that he had heard growing up. And so he wanted to kind of preserve his folk tales. So I went through his book and there are some really good stories in there. But the one I chose was something that just had a very lighthearted feel to it. It had a moral message, but that wasn't the main thing. And it just felt very whimsical to me.
So what I'm hearing is we're not getting a Game of Thrones style story right now.
maybe, you know, I wouldn't say we're not getting a Game of Thrones style story. Towards the end, it does feel a little bit Game of Thronesy. But the beginning starts off more like Studio Ghibli witch, and then the end is more Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones, but do we get to talk to a carrot at any point?
We do get to talk to something. Well, there's the crow. We get to talk to the crow.
Sounds good. I'm very excited to hear this story and where it will take us, because it sounds like it's going through a lot of different genres. But speaking of jumping between genres, I think it's time we dive into this tale. So, gather round, travelers, as we tell the tale of Fatma and the Crow.
Yakibud, Yakinabud. There was one, there was no one. In Persia, there was a little old woman named Fatma. She was smaller than a dwarf, but her generosity made her heart as large as any angel's. Whenever anyone needed anything, they knew they could visit Fatma in her house, which was no bigger than a sieve, where she would sit under a fig tree the size of a broomstick beside a pool no larger than the bottom of a cup. Whenever she finished housework, the old woman would be content just to sit on her small mattress, smoke her pipe, and smell her rosebuds. The story of Fatima takes place one winter evening after she had just snuggled into bed to escape the chill of a violent storm that had raged outside. When it was at its very worst, there came a sudden knocking at her gate, and Fatima went to go see who it was. As she struggled to straighten her veil, she spotted a drenched crow at her door. The miserable-looking creature asked for shelter and promised to be gone by the first prayer call of dawn. Of course, Fatma let the crow in, and he happily perched on the fig tree until the rain clouds crept away to reveal a brilliant dawn sky. When Fatma awoke, she found the crow merrily eating a fig. In return for her hospitality, the crow gave the old woman a glossy black feather and told her to throw it into the air and follow it if she ever needed to find him. Time passed, as it always does, and Fatma grew busy caring for her town. One day, stooped and tired, she wondered what else she could do to help them. That was when she remembered the feather and went to go find it.
Okay, question. First of all, if a crow came to your door, would you let it in and, like, you know, help it out? Or would you be like, it's a crow, you know, symbolizes death and all that, please leave?
I think I would. If it was a magical talking crow, I probably would. So, I mean, most magical creatures, I think I would let them in, but this is really just a symbol of Fatma's generosity. She is willing to help even the most insignificant creature to some people, which is, you know, a crow, or even rats and stuff, because those things don't matter to most people, but she's willing to get out of bed and go help them, regardless of if it's an inconvenience to her, if it's, you know, uncomfortable, if it's weird. That's just the kind of person she is.
Aw, but I was also thinking, if I were her and I got that crow feather, there's absolutely no chance I would ever use it. My gamer mentality of hoarding the special items would kick in, and I'd be like, yeah, I could be dying, but I would hold it going, what if I need this later? I'm not using it.
On my deathbed, holding like the one thing that could save me, like, well, I don't want to use it because then it's gone. It's a consumable item.
Because then it's just gone for the world. But what if? Just like, let's talk about this.
I do that on Baldur's Gate. I do that with my arrows.
Right?
I don't use them, like the magic arrows. Even though they're so common and I have like hundreds of them, I refuse to use them sometimes because I'm like, well, I shouldn't use this potion because what if I need it for a different time? Or I shouldn't use this because what if I need it later?
Right?
But it's a good thing that Fatma isn't like us, because she did indeed go to find her feather. And as soon as she opened the box where it was kept, the feather flew up and sprang out the door, with Fatma running after it. They traveled past fields of red tulips and large white ox daisies. They traveled past nightingales and sparrows that marveled in fear of the strange sight. They traveled past a rat in a cemetery that laughed and laughed as he shouted after her, "Oh, you do look funny, you little old woman," running after that feather. Fatma was deeply offended by the red-eyed bee's laughter, so she bristled and called back to him to mind his own business. Next, they came to a ruined palace where a young dervish looked at the sight of her in bemusement and called out, "How boring. There goes a little old lady chasing a feather." Once again, Fatma bristled in indignance and called out to the boy that it was rude to poke his nose where it did not belong. She knew what she was about, and the scorn of others would not stop her.
I would just keep going.
Yeah, she was. I like this image of her running after this feather and things calling out to her. And she doesn't care. She just looks over her shoulder as she's running and yells at them. But again, she's tiny. She's old. So that's also very fun.
It's like, jokes on them. I'm following a magic feather, dude. Like, I'd be afraid of losing sight of it and just be like, yeah, cool, whatever, I don't care. How many magic crows have you come across today, my dude?
After they had traveled far and wide, they came at last to the top of a mountain to a cave guarded by the largest div Fatma had ever seen. He had skin like a rhinoceros, teeth like plowshares, and two pointed horns sticking out from his head. For the first time since embarking on her journey, Fatma felt real fear. A div could roast a man over a fire for a snack, and he could cause earthquakes with his laughter. The little old woman knelt to the ground and called out a simple greeting. "Salam," she said. "Peace be with you." The div growled in response, but he seemed pacified by her polite greeting, and so he asked what she was doing and why she was trembling so much. Her voice shook to the core, but the little woman just bravely responded that she had traveled a long way and was just cold. To her surprise, the div gently invited her into the fire, and there, perched in the cave, was the crow. He was pleased to see her and asked what the matter was. When she responded that she had simply come to find a way to help more people, the crow affectionately named her the little grandmother, useful to all. With that, he gifted her a hen that lays golden eggs every morning. It would do so for as long as she lived, and she could do whatever she wanted with the eggs.
Okay, so the crow is magical, it has intellect, and it was able to give her the hen. Mm-hmm. Why then is this hen also magical, but it doesn't seem to have the intellect or, like, own self-freedom to do what it wants? Like, why is this bird being treated differently from the other bird? Like, that just seems so unfair.
It might be a magical world where some things are more magical than others, because it doesn't seem like the hen can talk.
It's kind of like Goofy and Pluto.
The rules of magic seem a bit weird, because the nightingales and the sparrows don't say anything. But obviously, we can tell from the story that they felt afraid. The rat could speak, the crow could speak, but again, the hen can't. And so it might be one of those weird things where some animals are magical and some aren't.
Yeah, well, I guess I'm a talking sparrow, so.
Yeah, you know all about birds talking.
Yeah, they're always tweeting, although they're not tweeting as much these days.
They're Xing? I don't know what the term is now. Do we still call it tweeting?
I think you send an X or something.
You post on X, I guess. Just like you would say you post on Instagram.
It's got the same vibe as the old tweeting.
No, it doesn't.
Anyways, it always strikes me when I see you see those indifferences. Like, of course they come up, but it always is like, you're both birds. It feels weird also one bird giving away another bird. It's like,
is this servitude?
It's interesting. I hope the hen is happy. I guess that's all I want to say.
The story does tell us that the hen was well fed and taken care of by Fatma. So I feel like if she was just a regular hen, that would be enough for her to have a happy life.
That's true. All right. Way to go, hen. Crow, little weird, but you know, hen, you keep living your best life.
So Fatma was delighted with this gift, even though it wasn't a talking hen. And after bidding the div and the crow goodbye, she followed the feather all the way back home. When she returned, she tucked her lucky feather away and made a nest for her hen. The happy hen laid golden eggs the next day, and every day hereafter. But our story does not end here. You see, when a person comes about a great thing and uses it for a great cause, others will often marvel at their treasure. Some thought it was a miracle, and others thought it was just a freak of nature. People came from every quarter to see the little lady and her golden hen. Everyone except for the wise old men, who shook their white heads thoughtfully, because they knew that soon the chief citizen would want the creature as soon as he heard of it. This villain was wealthy, but like all wealthy people, he was never satisfied. He had a great belly that shook as he walked, and a long beard that swept the ground before him, and flopped up and down whenever he opened his mouth. And this was very often, because he was always eating anything he could find. As the wise men had thought, as soon as he heard of the hen, he decided that he deserved the eggs and not some old woman. So he had Fatma brought to him, and after inquiring about her hen, asked if she would leave it with him for the night. Sweet Fatma, who helped all, innocently obliged him. But the next day, she found that he had returned a normal yellow hen to her, and not her golden one. Surely she thought, this must be a mistake. How could the chief citizen cheat people? She found out soon enough when she went to confront him and was driven away from his presence. Crying, she released her feather and it brought her back to the div and the crow. Both creatures listened to her troubled tale and the crow gifted her a copper pot and a spoon. He said that this would create whatever she wanted when she put it over a fire and made a wish.
This is why she used the item. She knew that she could use it multiple times, where we thought it was a one-use item.
She just gets more things.
I feel very satisfied.
Yes, I mean, I like this idea that anytime she has trouble, she takes out her feather, and the crow kind of goes, I'll take that back now, actually. You've used your three chances.
Well, it's hard, because she needs the feather to go back home, but then she still has it. Like, he really should have put some claws into it. Like, one day of good food, he might have needed to, like, put a limiter on that item.
Well, this is why magic has so many clauses now, is because people have ruined it. They've taken advantage of the system. Especially Fatima, who just wants to feed the hungry. How dare she?
Yeah, it is really hard to be at the little grandma who just wants to take care of people. I would also have a hard time someone coming into her. Gosh dang, you're annoying me. What? You're trying to, like, make the world a better place?
I guess.
Hey, I guess I'll help you.
Well, Fatima was happy for the second offer, and she returned home and used her new gift to feed the hungry until there were no starved or thin faces around. Even the animals and birds were full from her generosity. The chief citizen learned of this and naturally assumed that he deserved the copper pot as well. It made his mouth water just thinking of all the things he could eat. The next morning, Fatima was surprised to see the fat man and his servants at her little door. But her gentle nature forbid her from turning them away, and so she accepted the man's apology for the misunderstanding over the hen, and let him in for lunch. The greedy villain asked for chicken kebabs, turkey rice, fruit, yellow rose halva, and lemon sherbet. Fatma went into her kitchen and returned with all the food. Of course, he once again asked to borrow her items, and she did not want to quarrel with him or with his guards, so she obliged. Once again, the items returned to her the next day were just an ordinary pot and ordinary spoon. And once more, she followed the feather tearfully to the crow's cave. She sobbed to him about the villainous, crafty man. The crow comforted her by saying that there were those people who only do good if they are forced to. And so he gave her a hollow golden pumpkin and told her that it would teach the chief citizen a lesson, as well as get her pot and hen back. This time, Fatima was done with being taken advantage of. She marched herself straight to the fat man's mansion and shouted at his gate that he had better let her in. The chief citizen was merely amused by the little woman's daring and let her in just to speak to her. As soon as she saw him, Fatima called out for him to tell the truth and shame the devil. He had better return her items and take her advice, or he would learn to regret it. Naturally, this just made the chief citizen angry, and he advised her to leave before she regretted it. Fatma was undeterred and told him that she had lived to help others her whole life, and he should do the same. At this, the chief citizen laughed so hard that even those outside the mansion could hear the rumble. But what really set Fatma off was when the greedy, bulbous man snorted that everything belonged to the strong and not the weak. "That is not only wrong, but insulting," Fatma said. "I may be small, but I remember the words of the poet. Since men all come from the same source, they are one body, separate parts. Hard fortune strikes no limb alone, for all will sense his loss of peace. The one who does not feel the misery another feels cannot be called a man." At this, there was silence. The servants were affronted on their master's behalf, the very same master who had just turned red and bellowed that he had had enough. Everyone was frightened except for Fatma, who finally saw that there was no reasoning with him. So she pulled out her pumpkin and chanted the words the crow had taught her. "Out, out, 100 mace bearers, and defeat the oppressors." The mansion was suddenly full of mace bearers that chased the chief citizen onto the streets. The people were thrilled to see their hated chief being run around like a scared child, his belly swinging in front of him and his feet tripping over his beard. Finally, he came crawling back to her, groveling, trembling, and begging for her to call off the warriors. Fatma thought about it for a second, and then happily obliged, because she did have a gentle nature after all, and soon he had returned to her what belonged to her, and she went to work setting the town right. Soon, everyone was full, busy, and happy. As for Fatima, she was content to sit on her rug under her fig tree by the small pool in her small house and smoke her wooden pipe while smelling her roses. "This is good enough for me," she said. And that is the story of Fatma and the Crow.
The obvious lesson to take away here is be careful of that one friend who's super nice, because when they snap hard. And it gets scary.
I think this is a very good, just general story for a lot of Persian people, like even my mom specifically, I think, call out. Because I feel like there's an extent to which you can be generous and kind and gentle and let people, you know, borrow things from you and take things from you before it becomes them taking advantage of you, I think. And when you have a people who are so generous in nature and so gentle and so giving, and I mean, this is just a cultural thing, I think. We're just such giving people that we want to give and we want to pay for things and we want to offer everything we have. Even the Persian saying, Hazar Dafa, which is 1,000 times, is used so often whenever you ask for something from someone. They often just say, you know, for you, Hazar Dafa, 1,000 times. They don't even think about it. And so I think being gentle and generous is so good and such a good skill to have and such a good quality to have, especially in this modern world. But you still have to be careful that you take care of yourself so that you don't end up with nothing. That you don't end up giving and giving and giving until you have nothing left to give, especially to people who don't deserve it. Because when Fatma gave to the people who deserved it, she ended up seeing how happy they were and that made her content. But when she gave to the person who didn't deserve it, he just took and took. And everyone was worse off for it, including her. So
yeah,
just a, you know, a wise word. And in his foreword, which I think is a very nice, you know, introduction to the stories, he does say, the author does say that a lot of these stories have different kinds of messages. Most of the folk tales have a word of wisdom, usually about a journey of finding a purpose or the prejudice against women, the poor and the humble. And I think Fatma and the Crow is definitely one of those folk tales that does focus on finding your purpose and finding a way to stand up for yourself. Because Fatma was a woman and she was trying to help the poor and the humble. And the best way to do it is Game of Thrones style.
Yeah, we started very classic fairy tale and then we went into this dynamics of like even local politics, like I was feeling for her like the second time. I was like, yeah, don't give it to him. But then it's like, yeah, she was surrounded by guards. Like, what was she supposed to do? Like, I understand, like, yes, stick up for yourself, but also, like, don't be stupid.
Yeah. And so she went, she gave him the pot and then she went to the Crow because she had, you know, someone who had her back, someone who was her friend. And I like that the Crow doesn't, you know, shame her and say, well, why'd you give it to him?
Yeah.
You know what he was going to do. You knew his nature at that point. Because the first time you could say, you know, shame on me. I should have known better. The second time is definitely like one of those shame on you type things. And it's just kind of the Crow being gentle and being like, listen, it's not your fault that you got taken advantage of, because people will do that. Not everyone wants to be good.
And just a quick question, you talked about the Crow is hanging out with the Deev?
Yeah, it's like a devil type creature, I think.
Ah, so yeah, I wasn't sure. You described it a bit, but I wasn't sure if it was like a devil-esque. So it's kind of really funny to think of this bird of often seen as like one of the symbols of death next to this devil. And they're just both like, yeah, 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 here is this pot. It'll give you all the food that your village needs. Like, we're backing you. We're supporting you.
To be fair, I really thought this story would end with her, you know, making the chant to the pumpkin and then the div coming out of it, because I thought that'd be quite funny. But yes, the div type creature, you see it a lot in Persian stories. I think in the episodes we did on the Shahnameh, where we were talking about Rostam and kind of his adventures, his kind of like, you know, task that he was doing, we do see the div there. And I think it's spelled D-I-E-V. In the Shahnameh, and here it was spelled D-E-E-V, so it's a bit, I think it's the same thing. I'm not sure if I'm completely misreading that, but to me, I just read it as it was one of those demon creatures.
I'm sure if you talk to them, they would have like, well, you know, that's like that area of the world. They have their own unique things, but we're slightly different. You know, we have more sins we want to get after people for. I don't know. I'm just making stuff up. But yeah, it's always interesting to see variations on similar creatures, but sometimes it's just really confusing. Like last week we had the puka, and like when I was trying to look that up, that had like seven or something, different ways to spell it. And I was like, okay.
And then they were all different too, because they were like goblins and some of them were fairies and some of them were just spirits. And you're like, well, which one is my Pooka?
Right.
It's the same thing here. I mean, I do like that in this story where we actually have a kind of like demon creature, he's the polite one and he goes, ah, you know, you greeted me quite politely, so I'm going to be nice to you and bring you inside and give you some warmth. You know, this creature that we would traditionally associate with danger is not the one that's the actual dangerous or the real like villain in the story, which I think is fun.
Yeah, he's just hanging out with his friend, the crow. They're just
hanging out in a cave helping people.
I'm actually, the more we're talking about this, the more I'm fascinated with this duo. And I love the idea of these two subtly helping out other people. Like, there's several other grandmother-like type people in their own villages that they're helping out. And they're like, ah, who do we have today? Ah, we got this one. Okay, here's a pot for you.
And just one last note. So the opening of the story starts with not once upon a time, like they do in Western stories, but with Yakibud Yakinabud. And this is traditionally how a lot of the folk tales start, especially in oral storytelling. In written texts, you see a lot of different varieties. You could see like a long time ago, like, you know, you could see things like in a land far away, because those are usually translations. But Hikmat talks about this in the foreword again, and he mentions that Yakibud Yakinabud is a very traditional way of storytellers starting stories. And the idea, there was one, there was no one, is part of a larger saying that goes, there was one, there was no one except God, there was no one else, which is really about, I mean, it's a little bit more than the once upon a time. It's kind of saying that even before time, even before space and people, there was a higher power, and that's where creativity came from, and that's where the kind of the magical powers and the stories we see, they all come from God, really. And we see this in a lot of like more religion-based cultures, is that there will be mentions of God, there'll be mentions of people talking about the sunlight frightening away monsters, because that's when God is watching, or that's when, you know, that's when you're in the holy light and stuff like that. So at its core, I mean, this is very much a classic opening, but it's a lot more than just there once was. It's just saying that it's that time between everything and nothing is kind of what it's attributing to.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's kind of fun way to like have, because I know we mentioned it when we do a couple episodes, is that when they start in a unique way, it's often interesting to see why they start that way, and where the opening comes from. Because I think it's always so cool to see, because it's kind of like the setting the stage of the story.
Yeah, the once upon a time, I feel like, is almost a spell in of itself.
Mm-hmm.
It is like right away setting the tone of what to expect that is to come, that not, I don't think really any other genre encompasses.
No.
And we talked a bit about this in the Star Wars episode, how the line long ago in a galaxy far, far away was also taken as a line to like make it a bit of a fairy tale and put it into that genre. And that also has a similar effect in modern day of like, when you see that on screen a long time ago in Galaxy Far, Far Away, you know, you just need to wait a moment. And then it's like the Star Wars theme begins. And then you're kind of thrown into the tale of what their, whatever movie or episode you're watching at that time.
Mm-hmm.
It was interesting to see another version of that kind of pop up here, and see like how it's similar of like trying to set this mystical space of there was God and there was no one. And then we continue on. And I think it's a really cool to highlight when those moments pop up.
And with that, dear travelers, we hope you travel to a galaxy far, far away with us and enjoyed welcoming spring with us through this tale. As always, if you want to see the show summary, notes, or updates, check out our website or our social media accounts. We are on X, formerly known as Twitter, as From Enchanted, and on Instagram, YouTube, TikTok, Blue Sky, Mastodon, under our podcast name. Basically, if it's a website, we're probably on it. However, if you are old school like Sparrow, you can email us at talesfromenchantedforest@gmail.com. We'd love to hear your questions, comments, and suggestions. So if you have anything to share, please don't hesitate. And remember, do message us and tell us, how do you start stories where you're from?
And remember, there's always a place for you in the Enchanted Forest.